This is Michael Edward Miller for WUTC. Steve Babb and Fred Schendel are rock stars in Japan and Europe, and yet here in Chattanooga, their hometown, they are relative unknowns, and they like it that way. Their group is Glass Hammer. WUTC's Richard Winham visited the two musicians in their recording studio recently to talk about their new album, their upcoming tour, and the work they do as producers for other musicians here in Chattanooga.
Steve Babb and Fred Schendel have been the principal members of the progressive rock band Glass Hammer since the early 1990s. Steve plays bass and Fred plays keys. Together they write all the music for the band. The style of music they play had its biggest audiences in the early and mid-1970s, when the bands the two musicians admire and emulate, King Crimson, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and Jethro Tull, played to stadium-sized crowds. By the time Glass Hammer began making records and playing concerts in the early 1990s, mainstream rock had pretty much moved on. But a new generation of progressive rockers was still drawing a crowd, albeit much smaller than in the 1970s. It took Steve and Fred and the band a while to find their audience, but after years of playing music they didn't particularly like in small clubs across the South, they were more than happy to wait. Now, almost 25 years later, they have a new album, their 17th, called Valkyrie, which many regard as their best work yet. And they are now busily rehearsing for a couple of shows in Italy.
We're playing in Italy next September, and I was just going through with the promoter to see how things were going to go for meals for the band. We have our own Italian chef for 4 days, and they're going to drive us around the country, and we're going to see the Alps, and we're going to sign autographs for hours and hours, and we're going to play to 5,000 people that are waiting to see Glass Hammer in Italy. And they mostly come from Milan and places like that, so we will have the rock star treatment there. We play in Chattanooga. If we can play for 200 people and get a hamburger before the show, we're lucky.
While it's true that the kind of reception they regularly receive in Europe and Japan, as well as in the northeastern US and Canada, far outstrips their reception here in their hometown, nevertheless, they did play a sold-out show in the Tivoli a couple of years ago.
Yeah, we did the Tivoli, which was a great honor to be from Chattanooga and get to play a big room like that. But there was a promoter involved. Typically, if we're going to do our own show here in town, we're going to aim a little smaller and do something comfortable. And we're looking at some venues right now.
So what's a good venue for you these days?
I have just reached out to the Camp House. I've had fans and friends tell us that might be a good spot for us. It's relaxed. I haven't been there, but Rhythm and Bruise is kind of gone now. That's where we did it. We've got fans that like to sit down and study what's going on, you know. and they like to sit and relax and watch. It's not such a, you know, like a mosh pit, really, for us. In fact, Mike Doerr used to laugh because he said you can tell Glass Hammer fans when they walk in the room, it's a completely different type of person, and they are just absorbed. They don't want to stand and bop around. They want to sit and look and watch what we're doing.
It'll start from the moment they walk in the door. You'll see them walk up to the stage and start checking out the equipment. And it's like, okay, what kind of keyboard is that? Now, what kind of guitar amp is he playing through? Ah, very interesting. I mean, it's kind of funny, but that's the sort of thing. They're interested in all technical aspects of what's going on. Yeah, absolutely.
Progressive rock has always tended to attract fans, often men, who take the music very seriously, much the way serious fans of classical music approach the music they enjoy. Sit quietly, pay close attention. That image of the progressive rock fan is a familiar stereotype to people who love the music.
I think it fits, and I think they'd agree. And they're happy to wear the stereotype. They're very intelligent people.
Some stereotypes come about for a reason.
That's true.
It's a weird mix in Chattanooga because it's fans that drive in from all over the place or fly in from all over the place. And then the local crowd, which are family and friends, not so many fans, but just lots of people that have worked with us in the studio, and they bring out their friends and anybody whose arm we can twist at, you know, or manipulate to go. So you've got this one group of really, you know, the stereotypical prog rock fan, and then you've got just a lot of musicians that from Chattanooga that'll come out and see it.
Or, like, you know, our chiropractors and stuff.
Yeah,
the people
that keep us alive.
That's always the frame with you guys, right? The paradox of, you know, a band that's really celebrated on the net in Europe, in Japan, I think. Is that still true?
Yeah. And we're going to Quebec, so we've got a pretty big audience in Canada. Yeah, right. So we're headlining a festival there. In fact, that'll be in May. And then the show in Italy won't be till next September.
You have a very relaxed way about doing these things, don't you? What's a typical year for you? Let's talk about the next 12 months. How many shows do you plan to do?
We usually let the promoters come to us instead of me getting on the phone trying to round up shows. I try to wait till a big opportunity comes, and then we discuss it as a band and we put it on the calendar. And typically, one show happens and one thing leads to another. So they'll find out we're playing in Quebec and somebody's going to want us to do something else. And then it just becomes, is it logistically possible to space out Glass Hammer concerts every 2 or 3 months? Because we like to rehearse a lot right before a show and be ready for it. But we won't do a traditional 5 or 6 city tour or 10 city tour. We don't do any of that.
When you play in Quebec, that's it?
Yeah, we'll play Quebec and then we come home and yeah, that's it. We'll go back to work at the studio working on.
So how do you travel? Did you use a bus or what?
They will fly us in for those kind of shows.
Is all your equipment?
No. We have to very carefully. Matter of fact, we were just
doing it today.
We have to put together riders that specify exactly what we need, and they'll provide all the backline. And it can be kind of tough because you show up these things and you hope they have what you want. Sometimes you have to kind of improvise a little bit around some of the equipment that does show up, but so far it's worked out pretty well.
As simple as the whole operation seems, though, it's planned months in advance just to get us on the stage. And it has to be done right. It's very technically, everything must be working and happening for us to get this So it makes sense. Yeah.
My life is a little easier than it used to be keyboard-wise, because it used to be, you know, I need, you know, these specific keyboards with these specific programs loaded into them, or I'd have to take along things that I could set up my patches. Nowadays, I have everything living inside of a laptop, which I can get on the plane and carry on in my backpack. When I get there, as long as they have, say, 5 keyboards of some kind that I can hook into a MIDI interface and control my setup, it's going to be okay. So that makes life easier until the computer crashes, then life is bad.
It all falls apart.
Yeah. In some ways, the 21st century has been liberating for you guys. It's almost as if you were born to be 21st century musician. The technology and so on's kind of caught up with you, right?
Yeah, to a large extent. It does make certain things easier, because you don't have to have literally 3 tons of keyboards to make the kind of sounds that you need. Because going out there with a Hammond organ and a Fender Rhodes piano, each one weighing about 300 pounds, you really had to mount an effort to be able to go do that kind of thing. But really, the biggest 21st or almost 21st century innovation that's made us possible is the internet, because that's how we're getting out there to people. Now, if we had come about in the 70s and we were young, then I guess we would have taken the traditional path that any other of the bands at the time did. But coming along later on in life and being sort of a retro band by the time that we started, and not being the kind of band that was ever going to get signed to a label, we just lucked out very much with the timing of having an avenue of getting direct to the kind of people worldwide that would want to hear us, and not having to tour so much in order to make that come about.
It's a two-word thing. It's progressive rock. It's both. It needs to be progressive, but it's based on that rock. So our mix, for instance, on stage starts with just the way it would for any rock band. It's all about getting the kick drum in the mix and making it pound you in the chest, and then it's the bass as loud as it can go and not, you know, we've peeled plaster off the Tivoli before. And with that. And then everything sits nice on top of it, and you got a good show.
Talk about those two separate processes then. You've just finished an album. How long is the gestation period on a record? How long does it take before you, I guess, that sort of writing, figuring out process before you take it to the musicians and start playing it?
We did this one. I'm going to give you the example for this one, because we made a big deal about how we did this one. A lot of the others were very much studio project albums. This one, however, we had noticed that we really liked the edginess of a rehearsed show over and above the previous recording it was based on. We did this album in reverse. We rehearsed it as if it were a show for weeks. And when it was time to do the concert, that's when we hit record. And then we got in a room together and played it like a band. So it had already gone through rewrites as a band, and everybody had a chance to put in their ideas and change things. And so it took several weeks to get it ready, and then it was recorded as if it was a concert. And the hope being we'd capture more energy that way, and we did. This album's really resonating with fans. And then we came back here and did the overdubs in nice comfort, you know, comfortable atmosphere. But it's still probably about a 3 or 4 month process.
Yeah, and a lot of bands would listen to that and go, well, duh. I mean, that's how it used to always be done back in the day, and that's how it still can be done for a lot of bands. Yeah. It's just never been practical for us for a whole slew of reasons. We've talked about doing it that way, but when it came right down to it, schedules didn't line up, and we didn't have the time to really get together and do that, and we just put our foot down this time and said, no, this is how it's going to be. We're going to make time, and we're going to rehearse. But and it's not necessarily a revolutionary idea. It's just something that we haven't had a chance to try out, but it worked very, very well.
It's a good thing we did, because when we go do our next shows, Valkyrie is the name of the album, and when we go out to do it, we've already learned it. So, yeah, we're gonna perform it from beginning to end. I
mean, there's precedent for doing it the other way, too. I mean, basically, we were the Beatles post-1966 until now, working in the studio, putting things together, whereas for this album, we became the Beatles pre-1966, you know, basically laying it down live on the tape, and then doing whatever tweaking was necessary.
Well, we liked it that way.
We liked it.
It's been good. Yeah, absolutely.
Totally.
Yeah, we've been hoping for something like that for 17 albums now. You'd think we could have done it before now, but it timed out great. Yeah, this is a band. Alan, our guitarist, who's written a lot of stuff with us, insisted that if we wanted to maybe have the success we'd had with one of our earlier albums, The Inconsolable Secret, he said, you two guys need to write it this time. and I don't want to contribute. Let you guys write it, which gave him more time once it was written to think about all the interesting things he could do with guitar, as opposed to stressing out over how to write a prog rock song. And so we championed the writing of it as we had done way back in the classic days of Glasshammer in the early 2000s and late 90s. And then the band came in and did their thing remarkably well. We've got the greatest band. We really do. I started out with this very, and I will say cliche, sort of fantasy progressive rock tale, a concept album, and it was going to be very involved and you know, very fantasy-based. We hadn't really done that in years, but I wanted it to kind of be cliche. But the more we looked at it, and the more the singers and Fred and my wife, who listens to, you know, tries to help me through some of this in the lyric writing, the more we understood, wait a minute, people aren't going to get this at all. This is way too complicated. So we backed down, and we did something about, we took a stab in the dark, really, and did something about trauma. And about a survivor of a war, and it's really a story about post-traumatic stress syndrome, trauma survivors, the people that have to gather around trauma survivors to help them back to some sense of normalcy in their lives. And so we tell a tale of a soldier and his the girl he left behind, and his journey into this war, and the awful things that he saw, than his inability to make his way back. And her, that's the Valkyrie, is that the girl that loved him has to come to the battlefield, basically, and bring him back. It's very very simply stated for a prog rock band. It's we get into some complicated themes, but this is a story from beginning to end, and it's kind of meant to be listened to that way. So, and if you do immerse yourself in 65 minutes worth of music, there's a story that's told, and it's told through music and lyrics. And at the end, it had to have that big emotional impact, and it seems to have done its job.
As you may have gathered by this point, if you've been listening to the program since the beginning, Steve Babb and Fred Schendel have managed what few of their peers have been able to pull off. They live like rock stars when they choose, but most of the time they live comfortably here in Chattanooga, working in their studio adjacent to Steve's home on a quiet street off Lee Highway. The main room of the studio isn't any bigger than a typical bedroom, with soft lamp lighting, comfortable chairs, and several banks of computers.
What's which? Does the music support the studio, or does the studio support the music?
It's both.
It's both.
Yeah.
The band is self-sustaining, and it supports itself. And I would say that generally the studio is, like, really the livelihood.
Yeah.
But
And some of what the albums generate will actually, I mean, it goes back into the studio, and it always feeds itself. It keeps it, like, self-sustaining, exactly what he said. And we could probably if we got rid of Glasshammer, and we focused more on the studio, we might be wildly successful at something we do over here. But we kind of need both in our lives. And that's why we have the cake and we eat it too.
So yeah, gotcha.
We all go home tonight and we have dinner and it's there on the table.
It's
and people.
It's inspiring, you know.
Yeah.
I think you've got.
I think the other people can. I think people can do it, but sometimes they'll have unrealistic ideas. And I went through this for years, 10 years that I would. I don't regret it. But so much of it was based on, you know, a foolish notion, a premise that was incorrect. And that was that you had to reach a certain level and you had to play for 20,000 people a night to be happy. And that wasn't what we were really after. That's what none of these people are after. They want to make music and make a living is what they want to do. And they want to occasionally have some applause. That's really what it comes down to. And so be practical and figure out a way where you can do that, put food on the table, and you don't have to live out of a suitcase. That's not a good life for anybody, really. Rock stars included.
I enjoy performing live, and it's nice to get out in front of people and get that immediate feedback. It's very gratifying to have people appreciate what you do in that immediate of a way, because otherwise you have to put out an album and you have to kind of wait for word to filter back to you that, hey, maybe that was a good thing. And sometimes you don't actually even get that. You get kind of, well, you know, better luck next time. So it is very nice to go out and do a concert, because it makes you want to continue, because then you do get people coming up to you going, I appreciate what you're doing, and that's fantastic. But I really enjoy just sitting here in a little room working by myself or with, you know, two or three other people crafting a thing, and that is every bit as rewarding to me as getting out and doing those concerts. And I don't necessarily need that feedback every day of my life, because I have, frankly, enough of an ego that as long as I'm happy with what I'm doing, I don't much care.
Oh.
If you'd like to find out more about the band, Glass Hammer, and the new album, Valkyrie, their website is glasshammer.com. If you're a working musician and you'd like to talk to Steve and Fred about working with them in the studio, again, their website is the best place to start. For WUTC's Around and About, I'm Richard Winham.